And if you enjoy what I do here on Coast to Coast, when I get to come in on these weekends and host and have these great conversations, I want you to check out my show. It's called Fade to Black. And if you go over to the Coast to Coast AM website, you'll see my name right there. You can click on it. It'll take you to jimmychurchradio.com. We broadcast Monday through Thursday from 7 to 10 p.m. live every single week. And that is Pacific time. So you can go and listen to Fade to Black, get your 3 hours in, and right when we wrap, you go straight into Coast to Coast and George Norrie for another 4 hours of great paranormal and supernatural and conspiracy talk that we do every single night here. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Again, that link is over at the Coast to Coast website. You can just click on it, follow me on Twitter. I'm a big social media guy, as is Micah Hanks, and he's also a pretty good singer, too, as well. You can follow Micah at Micah Hanks, and his website is MicahHanks.com. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back with Micah and your phone calls. Stay with us. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, now standing in officially on a Sunday morning. Our guest tonight, Micah Hanks, and we're going to get to your phone calls here in just a bit. Micah, I just played the Mavericks. You're a musician. You've been George's backup band a couple of times, haven't you? Well, how great is that to hear the Mavericks on Coast to Coast?
Oh, it's fantastic. And in fact, I always enjoy all the music that you select. If I didn't even hear who was talking, I could usually tell if you are filling in just from the comeback music that you guys play. But yeah, that's true. Also, I have had the esteem and pleasure of being able to back up the one and only George Norrie live on the stage a few times. And actually later this year, as long as this pandemic doesn't interfere, I hope to do it again. So, yeah, we love the music here on the late night airwaves.
Now, I just wanted to ask you this. I don't think I've ever asked you this question before.
Don't do it.
I'm not asking you to do it now. You do a great impression of George. And have you ever talked to George as George in person?
I think maybe. Yeah, you know, George and I have clowned around like that before. One time at a UFO event, we started doing impersonations. Let me tell you that. And we were telling jokes. Of course, George always tells jokes at events. But yeah, we've clowned around a little before. And I think at some point I probably allowed George to speak to George. Yes.
Yeah, I'm only bringing this up because you and I did this a couple of years ago on my other show, Fade to Black, and we came back after a return, and you were doing George. And I thought to myself at the time, and this is the truth, I know that George listens to Fade to Black just like I listen to Coast, and I thought, I wonder if this makes him smile, or if I'm about to get a text, right? If he's going to go, what are you doing, man? But he's actually pretty funny when it comes to this stuff, and I just thought that the respect is half of it, right?
Oh yeah, and that comes back to music too. He was here in Asheville, and in advance of one of the events that they were doing, and he and Tommy and I are sitting there. We're all having dinner, and you know, George has always got another song on his phone. Micah, do you think you could do this one? You know, listen to this. Listen to the rhythm on this one. He just loves music, and so we always have a great time. We're talking about movies. We're talking about songs. You know, and from time to time, we might talk about UFOs, but that's mostly on the mic.
Yeah, and Gina's with us tonight, by the way. And a couple of years ago, I'll say this for the Coast audience so they can pick up on a George vibe here. George, I apologize for telling this story, but a couple of years ago, we were doing a conference, and George arranged through myself and somebody else to go up and do a couple of songs, and with Robert Perala, actually. And what was funny was what was supposed to be one song turned into two. And the next thing you know, and Gina was there, George did like a full set. He was up there for 45 minutes, and it was just wonderful to see that. He just loves to sing and get up in front of everybody and croon. He's just amazing at it.
Oh, yeah, he's a really good singer. And I've always enjoyed that as well. He's got great taste, for classics, jazz, old rock and roll, stuff like that. But I'll just tell you this really quickly. The first time we ever did a rehearsal with him on stage, I remember he stood at the very edge of the stage off in the darkness with his microphone and actually said, I'm just going to listen to the band, do each one of the songs. And this was the rehearsal in advance of the event that night and everything. And so, but the minute we started playing, he jumps in, takes the cue, and he just ends up singing every song with us. Our rehearsal just ended up being he sang every song the first time we played it. It's like we'd rehearsed it for a decade or something. But he's over there in the corner, off in the darkness, by himself. And I just thought, this has got to be one of those moments you'll remember forever. George just standing over there in the darkness, singing along to your band to an empty auditorium. I wish I had a video of that.
Yeah, he said to me, okay, we spent way too much time on this. But he said to me one time, we were going through a sound check. And he goes, we don't need to do a sound check, man. It's rock and roll church. It's not the Boy Scouts. I was like, wow, okay, that's it. And unrehearsed, just went through. Anyway, let's get to the phones. Are you ready?
Let's rock and roll.
Let's do it. Let's go to Sean in Norwalk, Ohio. Sean, you're up next on Coast to Coast. Welcome.
Hi. I think it's entertaining and interesting to talk about the suppression of knowledge about ETs. But I think in a down-to-earth situation, we've got to get sources, some of which I read, like Global Research, globalresearch.ca, which includes, I believe, truth tellers from the CIA, the FBI, the Pentagon, who got disgusted with the kinds of corruption within those institutions and have come out and included many other writers, economists and political scientists who are pretty much censored by the existing media. They are only able on some needles in the haystack sites like Global Research, globalresearch.ca, to talk about things like the, there's an article, for instance, the CIA takeover of America in the 1960s by killing JFK, RFK, and MLK. And another one, which is...
Hey, Sean, can you get to the question for Micah, though?
I think that I enjoy his discussion of how the term conspiracy theory has been weaponized. Going back to those assassinations where one of the major researchers, Mark Lane, got his Freedom of Information Act file from the CIA, and it... revealed that all of the CIA assets throughout the media were ordered by the director of plans of the CIA to discredit him and gave them by the number dozens of talking points. One of them, of course, was their concoction of this term conspiracy theory.
Sean, let me jump in really quick. You make a really good point. And what Sean is referring to, of course, is Project Mockingbird. Micah, and when we discuss these subjects, and I know that you're not a conspiracy theorist, but conspiracy is a big umbrella these days with a lot of things hanging off of it. And when we talk about the control of the media, we can now cite Project Mockingbird and go, hey, if you don't think that this has occurred, check this out. And that's where we are pretty much today, right?
Yes, again, I am not just interested in UFOs. I actually am very interested in conspiracy theories. I'm very interested in, as Sean points out, the potential weaponization of that term, different uses of that. Again, I think that some fundamental realities for which there are historical precedent include the idea that, yes, intelligence agencies have utilized media in various capacities over the years. That only makes sense. That is perhaps at times less intended to misdirect the narrative for American citizens than it is to plant certain ideas that we are certain that foreign intelligence will be observing. We could look at examples of that. But again, more broadly speaking, the idea that, A, that the media has actually been utilized by intelligence services, I think that there is historical precedent for that. Unfortunately, there's also historical precedent for the idea that there have been certain illegal activities that have been carried out on part of government agencies over the years. One that comes to mind, of course, is MKUltra. This is really conspiracy territory for a lot of people, but again, the fundamental truth about that is that this actually occurred. We'll never know the full extent to which it was carried out and what was actually undertaken, because so many of the documents were purged. It was an accident that they actually came to light in the first place. And so, again, I try not to be this person who says, you know, I completely distrust my government. Well, I don't, but I recognize that there is, I do not completely mistrust my government, I'll say that. However, I think that due to the historical precedent for the things we're discussing here, Jimmy, I also think that it is not a crazy position for one to hold, that they are a little skeptical at times of certain things that the government does, and hence why we have to proceed with inquiry intelligently. We need to do it reasonably, and we need to utilize resources available to us, like the Freedom of Information Act request, to try and gain access to information that is not immediately made available to the public, if especially that information is in our best interest to know.
Now, is that an indication of it is the alternative media that has always kept their foot on the gas, and now it seems that alternative media is a true, honest source of information just like anything else?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. To your point, yes. This is why I like alternative media or new media. Then again, we also have to be very wary of, you know, anybody with a Twitter account and a WordPress blog going out there and saying, I am a journalist. Again, not everyone has had actual investigative journalist training or background, you know, in that discipline. They haven't gone to school and studied journalism. Just because you have a blog does not necessarily mean that you're going to be the next Woodward or Bernstein. But I do think that it's important to point out that, you know, from time to time, people who are operating from the citizen journalist, and the same goes for sciences, citizen science perspective, they may come across things, they may discover things, they may take interest in certain subjects that, for whatever reason, in the mainstream scope of things, it does not get as much attention as it deserves. That has traditionally been the case with the UFO subject, where the mainstream media maybe has kind of played that down and acted like this was nothing and that there was no real story here, whereas, in fact, now many people are warming up to the idea that that is the case. There is a story. Many of us have already known that for decades, however, and that is largely in part due to the very diligent work of reporters, journalists, but also, more importantly, those independent researchers in the public sphere, the citizen journalists, if you will, who have been really working hard at trying to get information about this out to the public through non-mainstream sources.
Yeah, and I would point out, before I get back to the phones, Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM has absolutely stayed focused for over 25 years. Right. And I realize that now Coast to Coast, which has always been important, certainly in our community. But today it's us that can sit back and go, we've been trying to talk about this for 25 years. And now everybody is taking us serious. Let's go out west. Let's go to Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Robert, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's funny that you mentioned the MKUltra. You could do a whole show on that by itself. That kind of started with television anyway. But anyway, I'd really like to say some stuff about the UFO phenomenon. Basically, the government knows that they exist, but they aren't as extraterrestrial as we think they are. Basically, after World War II, the Germans had developed anti-gravity vehicles that were basically giant electromagnets. And they took their scientists and they relocated to Antarctica. The proof of this is Admiral Byrd expedition, which kind of turned out to not so good. It ended with the loss of the Secretary of the Navy, Forrest Stahl. He was mysteriously pushed out of a window. Anyway, my point is these vehicles that we think are extraterrestrial are not 100% true. They're basically the Germans, with their German technology, they have been secretly doing this since the late 1940s. Basically, proof of this is the 1952 flyover of the U.S. Capitol building on national television, which you really don't hear much about, but it was captured. And the reason that is because the oil companies, Rockefeller, they were threatened with the propulsion systems of these vehicles. It was basically free energy, and they had worked out some kind of deal. I don't know. Nobody really knows. But in order for them not to spill, to let this information, this technology, publicly not public knowledge, which would have made the oil companies obsolete overnight, they agreed to let them do what they were doing as long as they didn't let this technology out.
That's well, Robert, let me jump in. We're in danger of running into a commercial break. So I want you to get to your question for Micah.
My question is, are you familiar with this whole this side of the UFO phenomenon being of German origin, and basically even not just German, but older than that, from the ancient Mahabharata, that's where some of this technology supposedly was rediscovered by the Germans and their research into this field. But
okay, I get you, Robert. I get you. I want Micah to have an opportunity to respond. Micah, that some of these craft are not necessarily from outside of our star system, but their origins are right here on Earth.
To answer Robert's question, I am familiar with some of those theories. Again, there are so many different approaches and ideas about what the UFO phenomena may be. This is, again, one of those approaches. Now, one thing I think we should also keep in mind, though, is that when we're talking about seeing something in the sky that we can't identify, there is no rule that's ever been stated that says that all things that fall under the scope of ufology must be, therefore, one thing. I mean, many people see experimental aircraft. Sometimes natural phenomena occurs. I think, however, that there is historical precedent for technologies essentially on par with what we are describing in the 2004 Nimitz incident, okay, that so-called Tic Tac. There is historical precedent, for those who have studied the history of this topic, that shows that those kinds of technologies have been around for quite a while based on anecdotal evidence and often actually from pilots and military officials who have had those experiences. I am on the fence. I'm not convinced that we can necessarily explain all of those technologies, let alone do so easily, through the lens of saying that they are somehow from here on Earth, although I have certainly looked at that possibility, and for one simple reason before we go to break, it is because as our astrobiologists, our astronomers, our physicists, our scientists keep looking for evidence of life elsewhere in the universe, we can't find it. And so one approach to ufology is to say, well, we know life exists here on Earth. We're pretty sure most of it's intelligent, I think. So maybe we could look for a source right here. That is one interpretation, maybe a valid one.
Now, wouldn't a pilot, again, you know, a professional witness, I've only got 30 seconds, Micah, but wouldn't we count on a pilot knowing the difference from something terrestrial and then something that is not?
Well, I think we could count on a pilot saying, I know this kind of aircraft versus this was an aircraft I've never seen or encountered before.
Yeah, and when we hear, and certainly going back to Fravor, you know what, we're going to be up against a break here, but Fravor's description, which always had my attention, about this zipping out of sight in just a couple of seconds, you know, covering vast distances, when you hear that come from a pilot where he knows whether we have the technology to support that or not, to me, is about as compelling as it gets. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest, Micah Hanks, and more of your phone calls are next. Stay with us. Okay, welcome back. And I do want to thank John Greenwald for coming in earlier tonight with an amazing conversation. And, of course, Micah Hanks is with us now. We will be getting back to your phone calls in a second. I want everybody to go over and check out this story that is up on the Coast website, because it's a case reminiscent of, you know, those creepy clowns and that phenomenon that happened a couple of years ago, because authorities in England are on the lookout for a person who has been scaring some residents of a community by roaming around in a plague doctor costume. Now, this individual has been spotted several times. There's a video of it up on Coast to Coast. You can go and check it out. Over the last few weeks in the village of Hellesden, wearing that long black cloak, that scary hat, and that long beaked mask that they used to wear in the 17th century when the plague ravaged Europe. Now, that creepy bird beak mask, I thought it would be pretty fun to wear while handing out Halloween candy a couple of years ago. And the first little kid comes up to the house with his bag and took one look at me, screamed, and ran away. I took that thing off. I thought, you know, but they are the creepiest thing ever. And if you've got somebody running around your neighborhood right now wearing that, that just ain't cool. You got to check out the video over at Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Micah Hanks. I am your host, Jimmy Church. We will get back to your phone calls after this short break. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Micah Hanks. And we've got one quick segment left of phones. And this, what you know, Micah, for you, a veteran of radio, and you've been hosting for so long, how cool is it for you to just interface with the Coast audience with back-to-back phone calls?
Oh, it's so fun. You know, I was actually a producer in terrestrial radio for years, and I got my start, Jimmy, like a lot of us do, actually answering the phones and saying, okay, what you want to talk about? Let's put you through live. So, you know, coming from the production standpoint as well as being able to host and then interact with the audience, you know, it's a process I'm very familiar with, and I really love getting to do it, even if it means staying up during the vampire hours, right? I think that makes it even more fun, right?
Well, and the other, you know, for me it is, and I've been doing this for so long, but my favorite part of talk radio, the guests are great. I'm not taking away from that. But it's all about the audience, and I just enjoy taking phone calls, and especially just, you know, just random and going for it, like we're going to do right now with a first-time caller, James, in San Antonio, Texas. James, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
All right, thanks. My main question is, while you were talking about UFOs and all that, I'm asking, what does it matter? I believe there are UFOs. But why make such a big deal out of it? What is the purpose?
Yeah, that's a, you know what, James? Call of the night right there. And he's right. And there's something, well, his opinion is right, I should say, in that, Micah, the United States Navy and the Pentagon, like, you know, one of the biggest stories, like, in the history of UFOs and ufology potentially happened this week. But the response was not what I thought it was going to be, and that is with the support of the mass media. I think James brings up a pretty good point, don't you?
I think he does, and I want to get back to that point in just a moment. I should also mention, though, that as you and John Greenwald talked about earlier, maybe the timing of this statement was a little odd because we have this release occurring in the midst of the you know, very timely and important reporting on the coronavirus pandemic, but you know, that's also a really great way to be able to kind of get a story that is non-topic A, as we would refer to it in media. It's a good way to get it buried. You also have to add to that, though, however, I think that as more and more people become accustomed to seeing regular reporting on the UFO topic, it's kind of becoming a thing, and it will, I think, increasingly with time become a thing where people are sort of taking an attitude like James there, where we are sort of saying, you know, well, we are all aware of this topic now, so why is it important? So back to the question, I'd like to try and, you know, illustrate a few reasons why I think that we could say that this is something that's important. Now, we do not know, despite a lot of competing theories, some of which perhaps are stronger or more evidence-based than others, but we do not know what the quote-unquote UFO phenomena represents. For my own part, I think that when we use that term, often we're actually referring to a lot of different things that may range from natural phenomena to experimental aircraft. Drones, of course, have to be taken into consideration in the modern era, but there's also that possibility from time to time that there are things that cannot be readily identified or associated with known technologies, especially those that have been acquired by or presently actually in use by a state actor. And this is what's significant to me about the DOD's statement the other day. we say we can't identify whatever is in these videos. And if you look at what defense experts, and if you look at what, you know, people from all different walks of life, whether it's the sciences or from the military, you know, we're looking at aviation and aerospace professionals. Everyone's looking at these videos and saying it seems highly unlikely that this is some foreign technology, like, and in fact, that's exactly what the DoD says. They don't think it belongs to China. They don't think it belongs to Russia. Of the known technologies that they are believed to possess, this doesn't seem to be a good match for those. And so we are left to have to say, we don't know what this is, but there is not only the potential, of course, always a threat potential, whether or not that is something that has been clearly illustrated or conveyed by this phenomena, and that's the good news. There's no evidence that there is a threat. But nonetheless, if we look at the Advanced Aerospace Threat and Identification Program that we hear about so much these days, that's the reason that the T word is in there, threat assessment. This is part of what the military does with these sorts of operations. And so that must also remain on the table. But on the more positive side of things, I would also say that let's, you know, for instance, look at the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Now, that very well may be something that can account for the phenomena observed in these videos. We haven't proven that yet, and that's why it irks me that I'm seeing people in the media and, you know, popular scientists talking about aliens. That's a bit of a leap in logic. But we need, it's not impossible, it's just we haven't gotten to that point yet. We haven't proven that. But now let's say that we actually do at some point. You know, if it looks like we are closing in on evidence of extraterrestrial visitation to planet Earth, yet again, this answers one of the single greatest questions that humankind has long wondered. This goes all the way back to the philosophical concept of cosmic pluralism. Are we alone in the universe? What would life be like on other planets? If that's what this phenomenon, this technology, represents, we may be coming close to answering that question. And I think that's one reason why this is not only important, but maybe one of the single most important issues of our time.
Yeah, thank you for the phone call, James. And it reminds me of when the stories started to break back in December of 2017. I'm going to make this really quick. My sister-in-law, okay, my family does not discuss UFO. They know what I do, right? But they don't discuss it with me ever. When the story broke, she said to me, and I was shocked, she goes, "Of course we're not alone." You know, like, whatever. And that was her reaction, very similar to what James is saying. What's the big deal? What, you thought we were alone? And I have to run with that. It makes a lot of sense. Let's see who's up next. Let's go to Philip in Lafayette, Colorado. Philip, you're up next on Coast. Welcome.
Good evening. The idea that we discovered anti-gravity technology from the Germans at the end of World War II, I think, is ridiculous. If we did, why aren't we using it? Why are we spending billions upon billions of dollars developing Stone Age aircraft like the F-22 Raptor, which can't hold a candle to the performance these things exhibit?
Well, okay, and Philip, I would say, well, I'm going to hand that off to Micah, but who's to say that we don't have that technology and we are not using it? And I think of, I always look at the B-2, right, the B-2 bomber, the stealth bomber, Micah. And that thing, there is something going on there besides jet engines. And I'm being serious, too. There's something anti-gravitic about the B-2. I may be wrong, but I've seen it fly, and it just doesn't seem right.
It has a very unusual appearance. It certainly does. I recall, I think it was Michael Shermer actually describing looking out one day and thinking he saw a UFO until it kind of dawned on him, oh, that's the B-2 Spirit I'm seeing. And he says this is a very otherworldly-looking aircraft. Now, what's really interesting is, in his book, The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects, Edward Ruppelt, who we mentioned earlier, the first chief of Project Blue Book under the U.S. Air Force, he presents, I believe in the very first chapter, a quote-unquote good UFO report. But if you read the description of the aircraft, they are very similar to the kinds of stealth aircraft that we would recognize today, however strange they look, but that would have been really out of place back in the late 1940s and early 1950s. So that's always caused me to wonder. But to the caller's point, you know, again, if I had to say what is most likely and what is least likely, I would, for my own part, say that it is, and this is after really giving some serious consideration to the idea, but I think it's far less likely that what we're talking about is exclusively German technology and all this stuff. A few points that have to be raised, of course, are the fact that toward the end of the Second World War, with material resources in sharp decline, Germany was utilizing wood in areas where normally only metal would have been used in the construction of some of their best aircraft at that time. And so the idea that they were actually building flying saucers when they had to be supplanting metal components with wooden components just to be able to build semi-functional aircraft to get them off the ground, I mean, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Now, we also do know about some designs of German origin, like the Horten brothers and their swept wing aircraft design that quite obviously were influential on later aircraft development. And by later, I mean just post-World War II. But for my own part, I think it would really, really, really be unlikely that all of the UFO phenomena that is reported can be accounted for by earthly technology that immediately appears after the Second World War, which is of earthly provenance. That seems like quite a leap to me. But that, of course, brings us to the more important question: if not our own technology or one that we can account for easily here on Earth, then what is its origin? Which is really an important question. And then one final point also, Jimmy. For those who look at the Nimitz incident or who look at the three videos that the DOD has now finally come out and officially released, even though we'd all seen them already prior to this, for anyone who says, well, this is probably our own stuff and this is what they're cooking up over there at Area 51, I would say you need to go back and look at the history of this phenomena and become familiar with the data that has already been on hand for decades, and very good quality data at times since immediately after the Second World War, because the history suggests that this technology, whatever it is and whatever its origin may be, it has been with us for longer than since 2004.
Yeah, and thank you for the phone call, Philip. And I will bring up this point, though. The reports of the TR-3B type aircraft, and I'm talking about a triangular craft without lifting capability, right? There is something to the reports that have been seen all around the world, and I've seen a couple of things that I can't explain when it comes to a triangular-shaped craft as well, and that would indicate to me something EM-related or anti-gravitic.
Yeah, and I'll also add on that note, I've gotten more really good quality UFO reports over the years from people having to do with large, triangular, silent, often low-flying but massive aircraft than any other kind of unidentified flying object.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Let's go to Wild Card. Let's go to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's pretty close to you, Micah. Ed, welcome to Coast to Coast.
I really enjoy your hosting, and you have such knowledgeable guests because you seem so knowledgeable, so I really enjoy hearing you. My question is, somebody brought the thing up a while ago about our secret agencies using, you know, not being honest. And when John Kennedy Jr., my question is, when John Kennedy Jr.'s plane went down, they said there was the New York Times, I think, planted the story that there was a pilot, when he went in there, it was getting dark, and it was a twin-engine plane, I believe, and he was saying, would you like for me to go with you? And apparently that was false, and I fell for it. I thought, oh, he's an amateur, and
right,
he couldn't handle the plane. And then I found out since, all of a sudden, recently, that he was a fanatic aviator. He had flown that at early night out to Cape Cod 18 or 19 times. He would walk around his plane and take notes and was very passionate about flying and was a super expert pilot with that plane, which stunned me. And I also had heard that something about there was some flashes seen by some witnesses like it had been shot down. I was going to see if Mike had heard anything along those lines about that event.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. Micah, I have heard JFK Jr. brought up so much in the last few months, and it's like a resurrection of this case and that last flight that he made. And so what do you make of it?
Well, And by the way, hello to Ed right down the mountain. I am just a couple of hours away from him. As far as JFK Jr., you know, again, that's a topic that's probably a little outside of my area of interest. Although, when it comes to the Kennedys in general and some of the strangeness associated with them, I can certainly speak to that point and the fact that, you know, there have long been questions. And I really think that to understand the idea that we touched on earlier, which is the presentation of the idea of ideas that fall outside of generally accepted topics of discussion in the mainstream media or otherwise as being quote unquote conspiracy theories. I mean, I'll see things like, for instance, people discussing Bigfoot, you know, as a conspiracy theory sometimes in media. And I'm like, what is a conspiracy theory about the suggestion that there is some sort of a bipedal anthropoid ape stomping around out there in the wilderness, which is a topic for another time. But the point I'm making is there are some very ridiculous associations at times made between ideas that don't seem to be acceptable for discussion scientifically or otherwise. And then, of course, the use of that term conspiracy theory. But to understand it, as was also touched on a little earlier in the conversation, I think a lot of that does kind of go back to the Kennedy assassination, John F. Kennedy. And, you know, I've been right there to the building. I've stood right next to the window where Lee Harvey Oswald is believed to have taken the shot. You can't really get right over to the window because they've got a glass fixture built around it. But I've stood there. I've seen, you know, for my own part, I think that the shot could have absolutely been taken from right there. But that doesn't mean that there aren't still some questions. You know, Lee Harvey Oswald's journals were published. I've read those. There are a lot of very odd things that come up in them. And then you look at Bobby Kennedy as well. And in fact, my understanding, and there's a great documentary, of course, about this on Netflix that folks can watch, but they actually note the fact that with the Warren Commission and the investigation into the cause of death of JFK, because it was so drawn out, it allowed the public time to really begin to speculate, and hence you get all of these different theories. They didn't want that when Bobby was shot. They wanted an open and shut case, very quick, and we're done with it. Sirhan goes off to jail. Some have questioned whether that is the entire story, but I think what we learn from that is that the intelligence services very likely see all this and they say, okay, we've got to try and steer people away from all these speculations about who done it, what actually happened, which was made very complex by the fact that when Jack Ruby, of course, goes in there and takes out Lee Harvey Oswald, any questions we might have hoped to glean about this or any answers we might have hoped to glean, well, those were taken off the table, weren't they? So,
well, let me jump in, Micah, and say great conversation. Amazing show tonight. Thank you so much. MicahHanks.com. I am your host, Jimmy Church. I want to thank, of course, Mike, Gina, Lisa, Chris, George, Tom, Lex, Sean, everybody at Coast to Coast, and my beautiful wife, Rita. I'll see you guys next week. Go Beckley Tappy.